Hello, everyone. My name is Justin Warner with DecisionWise. Thank you for joining us for today's webinar. If you are like us, we are ready to put 2020 behind us. And so today we are really excited to talk about employee engagement best practices looking forward into 2021. Our guest host today is Mr. Dave Long. Dave is a senior consultant and vice president of assessments here at DecisionWise. Dave, so thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Dave, with all of that, I'm going to turn the time over to you and really excited to talk through what we see going forward into 2021.
Thank you, Justin. Why don't we start out by just kind of talking about what I want to talk about today. We've got a lot we want to cover, including trying to put this into context for the era that we're in, this COVID-19 era that we're all experiencing. I would like to try to put everything I'm about to share in that context. We share a presentation like this just about every year, and we honestly learn new things about employee experience, engagement, every year as innovations happen, as different organizations experiment with different things. We learn more and more about engagement every year. And so we're going to attempt to give you an hour's worth of best practices for employee engagement. But do know that it's a huge field. It's the field that I've dedicated my entire career to. And so it's an entire field of study and learning of how to engage, retain, motivate employees in your organizations. But we do want to talk about this because I know a lot of the people on this talk, it's sort of a preaching to the choir situation. Most of you are familiar with the benefits of engagement. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time selling the benefits of engagement, but I do want to at least talk a little bit about the ROI of employee engagement. This is an infographic that is available on our website. And if you wanted to go find this on our website, it's under the infographics section of decisionwise.com. So, and it's just a useful infographic to take some of the studies that have been done around employee engagement and put them together. Needless to say, there are many, many non-quantifiable reasons why you want employees engaged. It's easier for you as an HR manager or as a leader to come into work every day if the people around you are engaged. So there's lots of personal benefits that we see, but we've also seen some of these benefits that you see on the screen right now, which one of them is organizations that are more engaged or more highly engaged have 19.2% growth in operating income. We've seen that the cost of disengagement is $3,400 for every $10,000 in annual salary. That's like 34% of a person's annual salary that you're losing because they're disengaged, or that's lost productivity because they're disengaged. People who are not engaged tend to leave the organization. And in fact, if somebody's highly engaged, they're 87% less likely to leave the organization. And we know the cost of turnover is high as well. So lots of reasons why you would want to invest in engagement as an organization. We're going to talk a little bit about how you might do that, how you might approach that maybe differently than you've done it in the past. And that's really the purpose of today's webinar, is to talk about that. Okay, let's talk about what we know about engagement. First of all, employee engagement is a state of mind for an employee where they're willing to bring more of themselves into work every day with them. And into work is kind of a different thing these days. I guess into their home office is where they're bringing their engagement these days. But what we're looking for is people that are putting more of their creativity, their time, their talent into the job. And the more that you can get that from people, of course, the more your business is going to be successful. We separate the things that we measure in employee engagement into two different categories: things that lead to satisfaction and things that lead to engagement. Things that lead to satisfaction are really the transactional or contractual part of the employer-employee relationship. Oftentimes, when we think we might lose somebody, we're thinking, well, let's see if we can pay them more, or let's see if we can get them a different manager or shift teams or something like that. Usually, you know, when you're close to losing someone, you're thinking about those satisfaction elements related to the job. And satisfaction could be anything from just feeling burned out and stressed to feeling underpaid, to feeling like you don't have the training or the tools that you need to do your job well. Satisfaction is really an important and foundational part of the employee experience. I don't want to say that it's unimportant by saying, look, we've also got this great new thing called engagement. Satisfaction is very important. When we used to run surveys and DecisionWise as an employee survey organization, when we used to run surveys in the past, we might have called it an employee satisfaction survey. Well, these days we call them engagement surveys. We still measure satisfaction elements because of how important they are to retaining employees. But we also want to see, are there elements that lead people to be engaged? And I want to talk a little bit about that and just present our framework for this engagement magic. Running through each of these elements, meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection, are five elements that we have found to commonly lead to engagement or drive engagement in an organization. In other words, getting beyond the contractual side of the job. Are people able to find meaning in their work, a sense of purpose beyond just the task that they're doing? Are they able to find autonomy, a sense of trust, a sense of lack of micromanagement, so to speak, that they feel like they can do their work with the trust of the organization, that they'll be able to be successful in doing that? Growth, that they feel they're making progress on a day-to-day basis or on a month-to-month or year-to-year basis, both professionally and personally. That's growth. Impact, that they feel recognized or valued for the contribution that they're making to the organization. And connection, do they feel like they belong here? Those are five elements that are really critically important. We see that a lot. And I'm going to add a couple of elements to this discussion, just in case they come up as we go through. Meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. First of all, I would say connection is the biggest one. And in fact, we've seen a lot of organizations flip to using net promoter score or employee net promoter score as a proxy for engagement. And we find that to be a pretty good proxy. If we really wanted a great proxy for engagement, in other words, how this person answers this question is really going to determine how engaged they are in the organization, we might use something like, on an agreement scale, I feel like I belong here. If people feel like they belong in the organization, they're far more likely to be engaged and they're far less likely to leave the organization. In addition to that, if they enjoy the work that they're doing, if they believe in the future of the organization and they can see themselves as a part of the future of the organization, those are also really important factors that'll lead somebody to be engaged. I want to cover a few definitions because we get asked this question a lot. In fact, we have a lot of people come to our organization and say, we'd like to do a culture survey. I think it's important to kind of talk about what's the difference between culture. We hear about employee experience and we hear about employee engagement. Culture is a set of values, norms, guiding beliefs, understanding that is shared by members of an organization and is taught to new members as the way to feel, think, or behave in that organization. Culture really touches all kinds of aspects of the employee experience. But really, when we start talking about employee experience, the employee experience is going to be an outcropping of the culture. So the sum of perceptions employees have about their interactions with the organization in which they work is the employee experience. It's a really good definition for the employee experience. Another way to say that is employee experience is the impact of culture on employees. The impact of culture on employees. So employee engagement is an emotional state where we feel passionate, energetic, and committed to our work. In turn, we fully invest our best selves into the work that we do. Another way to look at engagement is the employee's emotional response to the employee experience. So if culture is the way we do things around here, and then employee experience is the impact of the way we do things around here on employees, then engagement is the emotional response that an employee has to the employee experience. So in other words, if we're looking at this, and oftentimes, again, just because we're asked to work on culture, engagement is an outcome of employee experience. And employee experience is an outcome of organizational culture. Improving engagement will usually require improving employee experience, which will likely require adjustments to organizational culture. So those are the things that you want to think about. Like as you're thinking about engagement, we're going beyond just using an engagement survey to measure individual items that happen in isolation. We're looking at how the culture has led to those items being where they are, that has led to the scores that you're seeing on your engagement survey. The culture has done something to impact the employee experience, which has then done something to impact the way people are engaging in your organization. Here's a framework, and not enough time to get into the nitty-gritty of this, but I did want to talk about, like, if you look at this chart, you can see this gray triangle toward the middle says employee experience. Essentially, what we're saying is employee experience is a sum of cultural elements. Cultural elements will be created by senior leadership, organizational support structures, and what happens on the manager and team level. Now, there are other factors, of course, of culture that might impact employee experience, but these are three large buckets. So if you are planning to impact engagement in your organization, you really need to think about how are we adjusting the experience that employees are having with this organization. And if we're looking for levers to pull, we would look at senior leadership, we would look at organizational support structures, and we would look at managers and teams as the key areas that we would act on in order to try to influence employee experience, which would then lead people to choose engagement.
Hey, Dave, before you go on to the next slide, can you just highlight there, you have the word, the invitation. You know, it's a 50-50 proposition and it is an invitation. I think this is a really critical point for people to understand. You mind just talking through what we mean by the invitation and how employee choice fits into that? Not that it takes the burden off of, you know, everyone who's listening on this webinar, but why is it important to understand both the invitation and the choice?
Yeah, and you could look at it as a value proposition. Most businesses have a value proposition that they're offering to customers. You have a value proposition that you're offering to employees. We call that employee value proposition. And sometimes we internally here at DecisionWise call it engagement value proposition. And what we mean by that is we create an environment, we create a culture that then leads to an employee experience that is a proposition to your employees. It's an invitation to your employees to say, look, here's all the things that we've done and we've created. Here's the environment that you're going to work in. Here's the team that you're going to work on in. Here's the senior leaders that you're going to be reporting to, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those things are an invitation to an employee to engage in the organization or to engage with us. It is still the employee's choice. And so even the most advanced employee experiences and cultures out there will still at times have disengaged employees because an employee just is not going to find the proposition or the invitation appealing. They might find it appealing somewhere else, but they're not going to find it appealing there. Now, the net result, of course, of having a great employee experience is that you have a lot of engaged people, but not everybody is going to engage. It's a choice for each individual. As we look at kind of some of the research around engagement, everybody wants to engage. Like that's the base state of everybody, that they want to be engaged. And if they can't find engagement at work, they might go to try to find it, you know, with a club outside of work or an organization that they're part of, a nonprofit that they're part of. They might try to find it with their family or their friends, and they'll look for it in their kids' sports leagues and other places. So everybody wants to be engaged in things and they want to be engaged at work. That's really kind of at the core of people want to be happy at work. They want to feel like they're making a difference while they're working. And so it's not that your people don't want to engage. It may be that they're not seeing an appealing enough invitation at work to engage. And the funny thing is, even when you have fully disengaged employees, they are engaged at something. They're engaged in hating your organization. And they're engaged in talking to other people and causing poor morale in the organization. So fully disengaged people, even they have found some level of engagement. And it may be in just actively destroying the fabric of your organization, but they have found engagement somewhere.
That's great. Thank you.
I wanted to start here just because I think it's on so many people's minds. You know, as I've had conversations with the clients that I have worked with, as we've started the process this year, one of the first questions that we have been asked is, what has been the impact of COVID-19 on engagement? It's been really interesting to try to understand this. One of the things that I will point out is that most of the organizations that we are working with and have been working with over the last 8-9 months since this whole thing has started have been organizations that have been basically okay. Organizations that are really circling the drain are probably not running engagement surveys. So the organizations that we're working with are self-selected to a degree because they are organizations that are willing to run an engagement survey during the middle of a pandemic. That being said, a lot of organizations are still doing it. And I would say, you know, if you haven't done it since the pandemic started, if you haven't at least done a pulse or something of your employees since the pandemic started, there's no time like the present. It's something that you really want to be listening and hearing what your employees have to say. And maybe now more than ever, it's a good time to check in with employees on engagement. But a lot of the organizations that we've worked with have been mostly okay in terms of their business. One of the things that I'll say is because of that, you know, if there's an organization that is on its last leg, they're probably not running an engagement survey with DecisionWise. Therefore, we don't know how engagement has been impacted in that sort of an organization. But in the organizations that are mostly okay, nobody's fully okay, unless you're selling plexiglass, I guess, or masks. But if you're mostly okay, this is what we've seen. In Q1 of this year, really leading up to the pandemic, we were seeing that employee perceptions were falling, but just a little bit. You can see we've got a little bit of a shorter arrow there. We saw lower scores kind of in general in Q1. Right after the pandemic hit in April and May, based on some of the responses that people have seen from their employers to the pandemic, the scores shot up on all of our surveys. So Q2 was one of the strongest, probably was the strongest quarter for engagement that maybe I've ever seen in the 6 years that I've been working in this field. So Q2 was incredibly strong. We saw huge gains in a lot of areas in Q2. As we moved into Q3 and we got a little more normalized, organizations also normalized with their scores. So we have seen since then that mostly all the scores on engagement surveys have pretty much gone back to normal in Q3 with a few notable exceptions. A lot of organizations are asking questions specific to how they've responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. And all of those items have been trending high. Mostly what we've seen, it's not in every case, but in most cases, we've seen scores in the 80% favorable range, which is a very high score. So most people are feeling really good about the way that their companies have responded to the pandemic. Now, that response is going to be different based on what the company is able to do. For example, there may be an organization where they don't have a lot of work from home flexibility for some of their staff. In that case, they might score a little bit lower on that. But for most of the organizations, at least that we've been working with, we've seen 80% favorable responses on COVID-19. The my organization dimension, and these are all things related to how I feel about the organization I work for. And so included in that is communication. It's the level of trust you feel for the organization and from the organization. It's the degree to which you would like to stay with the organization and that sort of thing. We've seen the my organization dimension continue to be a little bit elevated. And most of that has been driven by communication. So improved perceptions around communication and senior leadership have happened, and those have stayed high into Q3. And we've also seen worsened perceptions around stress and workload. So people are feeling a little more stress, a little more that their workload is a little more unbearable at this time. And it's not always connected, by the way. In some cases, workload has not been impacted, but people are still feeling stress. And there is stress associated with working from home that may not be related to workload. So we're definitely seeing heightened levels of stress or lower perceptions around stress. One of the things that I'm just gonna say right now, whether or not you have surveyed and you're seeing gains in communication, most organizations that we have worked with have made some serious changes to the way that they communicate. And I would say the word that comes to mind is deliberate. They've become far more deliberate with the way that they're communicating. When not everybody is under the same roof or under the same set of roofs, it's a lot harder to assume that people are getting information via word of mouth. Therefore, they're being deliberate about the way they communicate. A lot of organizations have done weekly calls or monthly calls with all staff to kind of give them updates on where we stand right now, not just related to the pandemic, but related to the business as well. Whatever it is that you're doing, if you've seen improved perceptions around communication, I'd say that it's worth examining that and worth seeing what can we preserve for the future? What can we save? What can we use in the future? Because this is the number one area where organizations struggle when it comes to the employee experience. They struggle in communicating and getting communication from their employees, and employees almost always feel negative about communication on balance in organizations. So one of the things that I would really recommend, and something that I would say is really could be a real benefit coming out of the pandemic, will be, what are the things that we learned about communication organizationally that we can preserve, put in a jar, put on the shelf, whatever you want to do to make sure that you are preserving that going forward? Because those are things that I think you can benefit from in the long term.
Hey, Dave, yeah. Just a quick question. We have a question. So somebody just did their first survey this year. It was the first time they've done an engagement survey. Is this something that they can use as a good baseline, or are there things that they should be really worried about using this as a baseline because, you know, work from home or just COVID in general? Yeah. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think it's a good baseline to see, you know, compared to where we were during a crisis to where we would be in the future. I think if they ran their survey in Q3, it'll be a pretty good baseline. We don't know what's going to happen to my organization scores in the future. Our guess would be they would return back to the norm. That's why I'm kind of saying, look, yeah, it might be useful to say, look, we've got improved perceptions around communication and senior leadership. What are the ways that we can do in order to preserve those things? But everything else has been pretty steady. Honestly, if you've run it in Q3 or after, it's been really pretty steady in terms of what the scores have been. The only elevated scores have been top-down communication, perceptions of senior leadership have been really the two main areas where we've seen elevated scores.
That's great. Thanks. There's also another question just about the number of companies behind those numbers. And I'll take that on. That information comes from our data science team. And so I'll take that to get that information out, you know, how many companies and what the numbers look like behind it. So
yeah, and that's the hard thing about doing quarterly numbers or quarterly updates like that. And you know, over the year, we'll usually work with over 200 organizations on engagement. So our yearly numbers are usually pretty good. Quarterly numbers are going to be, you know, whatever a quarter of that is going to be, understanding that in Q2, it was a little bit slower because of the pandemic. Engagement best practices. So let's get into some of the things that we're seeing with engagement. I'm going to propose two goals that I'm going to work from for the rest of this presentation. Two goals for your organization. Whenever you're thinking about engagement and whenever you're measuring employee engagement in your organization, the number one goal is going to be to take action on the feedback that you're getting from employees. The number two goal is going to be expand ownership of employee engagement, but I'm going to show you that here in a second. Let's talk first about taking action. I think in the minds of some leaders, this statement is true. We want to work in engagement, therefore we're going to run a survey. And we're going to have HR run it, and HR is going to run it, and they're going to report on it, and therefore we have solved for engagement. More evolved leaders will see, of course, that engagement is not just a survey. We don't just survey in order to improve engagement. We also have to take action on the feedback that we've received. And that is certainly an important part of building engagement. If you're receiving feedback from your employees, anytime you do that, you're going to want to also make an action plan and make sure everybody's aware that you've taken action on their feedback. And that's where some organizations fall short, by the way. You don't just want to action on what you've learned from the survey. You want to communicate it. And when you communicate it, you want to tie it back to the survey. We call that turning in the homework. If you do your homework, but you don't turn it back to the teacher, then you're not going to get credit for it. We want you to get credit for the actions that you take. When you take feedback and take action on it, you want to get credit for it. And if just by saying we're doing something new doesn't necessarily give you credit for their perceptions, you want to say, look, you gave us this feedback and therefore we responded to it and this is what we're doing with it. So an action plan is certainly an important part, but I'm going to say even this equation is not actually true. A survey plus an action plan equals engagement is not going to be true either. We do call that, though, the measure-react approach. We survey to understand or determine the level of engagement. We understand general areas of employee concern, what might be relating or impacting engagement. When we act to address those concerns, and then we measure it again to hold ourselves accountable to that. I'm going to encourage you and the people on this webinar to think about this. Think about how you can grow your organization in maturity. Every organization that's represented on this call will be at a different level of maturity. And I think the number one thing that you can think about in terms of progressing in terms of maturity as an organization is expanding ownership of employee engagement. When I did this, did the same employee best engagement best practices call last year, I talked about transferring ownership of employee engagement. And somebody in the comments suggested that we make the change to expand ownership of employee engagement. And I really liked that, that difference in words from transfer to expand. We're expanding ownership of employee engagement. Let me talk more about how we're looking to do that. Here is what we call an engagement maturity model. Every organization will find themselves at some level of maturity. Organizations that do not measure engagement, that do not care about engagement, do not think about engagement, are still having employees either engage or disengage based on what they're doing in the organization. We call that passive engagement. The second that you cross over from passive engagement into measuring engagement in your organization, you have left neutral ground. Now you've taken a stand, you've said, this is something that we care about. And so if you're saying that you care about it, you're at the measurement stage as an organization. And at the measurement stage, you can see right here, take organizational action is one of the things. Remember, the measure-react approach is something that is critical. It's something that you want to do every time you capture feedback from your employees, but it's really just the base level of maturity. If you're just measuring and taking action, that's the base level of maturity. And I'm talking about organization level action. If you just do a survey and have an organizational action plan and call it a day, you're at the measurement level. And that's okay. And you'll likely see some improvement in the first couple of years by doing something like that. But as you grow in maturity, you'll expect more of yourselves and people in your organization will expect more of the organization in terms of engagement. So the pathway that you have to go to access these higher levels of maturity is commitment, which is the second level of maturity, which means that we have to have buy-in from leadership. We have to have at least some executive sponsors. We need to engage informal influencers in the organization in the process of building engagement. And we need to teach people, managers, employees, what is engagement and how is it created? That's how we build commitment in the organization. Most organizations are targeting at least this management level. The management level essentially says that we as an organization are going to drive engagement through the leadership structure. And the gateway to do that is commitment, and usually commitment from senior leaders, but that's the management level. Once you get to the management level, again, you're expanding ownership. So it's not just the HR team that owns engagement. It's not just the top leaders in the organization that own engagement. We are driving engagement through the management structure, through the leadership structure in our organization, which means we have to do a few things. We have to build manager accountability by setting expectations and holding managers accountable. And we also need to think about how do we expand our listening campaign beyond the one time a year survey that we're doing. Let's talk a little bit more about that. How to expand ownership. So I talked about setting expectations for leaders. One of the really interesting things that I've had in, or maybe points that I've had in conversations with leadership teams is very often we're talking about something that's lagging behind in an organization. Let's say people feel like in an organization and it's impacting engagement, people feel like they're never getting feedback from their managers. And we see that feedback on a survey. They give that to the organization and say, we just don't get enough feedback from our managers. And that's one of the key areas of concern for an organization. And the conversation with leadership team begins with, okay, well, what is the expectation that you've set for managers with regard to giving feedback to their employees? And very often, the answer is, well, we haven't set an expectation other than it's just sort of implied. So if you're going with loose expectations of implied expectations, or even, hey, we're setting an example at the senior leadership level of giving feedback, and we think people ought to follow that example, you're probably going to run into failure in that area. We really encourage you to set expectations. But that means we need to go back a step and we need to design expectations for leaders. So we design expectations. What are the expectations that we should make for our leaders? Then we need to set those expectations. We need to hold people accountable to those expectations. So best practices for setting expectations, of course, this all assumes that you've designed the right expectations for your leaders to fit your culture. But you need to communicate those expectations broadly. Expected behaviors and competencies should be modeled by leaders. In other words, you should be an example. And then the organization needs to provide tools and training to managers to help meet those expectations that you have set. One way to set expectations is through a competency model, a leadership competency model. And I know that some of the HR people on this call will have already done this. We set expectations through competency models. The nice thing about a competency model is you can give a set of competencies, usually somewhere between 5 to 15 competencies, and say, these are the essential leadership competencies in our organization. And the nice thing about that is, all of a sudden now, you have a framework for leadership in your organization. Oh, a good leader does these 15 things, or excels in these 15 areas, or these 10 areas, or in these 5 areas in this organization. At DecisionWise, we have standard assessments that we use with a standard competency model. And our competencies will center around things that we believe leaders need to do in order to be effective generally. Now, in your organization, you might say, okay, well, we like the DecisionWise competency model, but there are a few things that we need to do differently in our organization in order to fit market needs, or in order to fit the needs of our employees, or in our unique situation, we might need to tweak that. So I really do encourage organizations that are really going all the way with this to sort of develop your own competency model and what it means to be a great leader in your organization. But three major categories or foundational categories that we use are the degree to which your leaders drive results, the degree to which they are able to lead change initiatives in the organization, and the degree to which they are able to engage their people. Three major categories: driving results, leading change, and engaging people. Accountability for competencies. And then this is really the second part of this. You set expectations through a competency model, and then you hold people accountable to those expectations. A really good way to do that is through 360-degree feedback. And I would say that this is what you might do on the front end of setting expectations. You can set expectations. You can give a 360-degree feedback assessment to an individual, and all of a sudden they can see, all right, these are the competencies and the associated behaviors that this organization looks for from leaders. It's all spelled out for them right there in the 360 assessment. And they get their first view of how they're doing on those things by having their peers, their direct reports, their managers, and themselves give feedback to them about how they're doing in those areas. Usually, a good 360-degree feedback assessment will be development focused. In other words, this isn't the first accountability measure. It may be more of an accountability measure in the future, but if you're running a 360 the first time, you're trying to get a baseline to see how are our managers doing in fulfilling the competencies that are going to lead to engagement in our organization. So we get that baseline from this, but we also give a place from which to make goals, to set development plans, et cetera, by using 360-degree feedback. Another way to do this, and this is more on the heavy-handed accountability side of this, is through annual performance reviews. You take your competencies and you create behavioral anchored rating scales for either the manager to provide feedback to employees and for people to provide feedback to themselves or to at least evaluate themselves based on those behavior anchored rating scales, bars, let's just call them that. Or you can add a multi-rater facet to your annual performance review where you get some feedback from direct reports and peers as well to help evaluate where someone stands in terms of fulfilling those competencies. That measure of accountability is really important, not only for them to understand what are you looking for as an organization, but for them to be able to put up a measuring stick to themselves and see, how well am I fulfilling this? Other than driving results in the previous frame, it's really hard for people to evaluate themselves on how they've been able to lead change or engage their people So it's really good to be able to say, look, these are the competencies required in order for you to engage your people. How are you doing on those competencies? If you're not doing as well in some areas, then you have a plan for how to better engage your people in the future. The next thing we're talking about is going to the management level. We talked about we're expanding ownership and we're listening more frequently to employees. What is your listening strategy? Most organizations struggle with what we call employee voice, the voice of the employee. Most organizations struggle with capturing that and responding to that in a way that is satisfying or engaging to their employees. The degree to which somebody feels like they are heard by the organization will greatly impact their sense of ownership within that organization. They'll feel like they belong there if they're heard more. Remember, belonging was one of those things that's kind of a key factor for engagement. So as we think about listening strategy, we think, okay, well, we know we do. Maybe you have, a suggestion box. Maybe you have programmed into your one-on-ones that your managers ask their employees each time for feedback for both the organization and for themselves. Some of you will be running an engagement survey, but we're going to talk about how do we expand the listening strategy. And I'm going to show you a whole bunch of things all at once. A lot of organizations run an annual survey, and they do that on an annual cadence. They do it once a year at the same time every year. A possible next step is that one in the middle is adding a pulse survey somewhere in between that. About the six-month mark, you use a smaller subset of questions where you're looking for additional feedback to run a pulse. Maybe you've put some programs in place to try to improve the way that your managers are providing feedback to employees. You want to give a pulse to see if those things are working. So they'll do a pulse at the six-month mark, and some organizations will even do a quarterly pulse to see where do we stand. And so they really know by the time they get to their annual survey, there are no surprises. There's different tools that we have at DecisionWise. You can use a self-service kind of pulse tool to say, look, I want to pulse different parts of the organization. You can use onboarding and exit surveys to look at some of those milestone moments at the beginning and end of an employee's relationship with your organization to see where they stand on those. Anniversary surveys are really cool. You send a survey to get some general feedback on the anniversary date for an employee where you're able to say, hey, how do you feel about the organization and is there any recommendations that you would give? And they have that opportunity to give that in an anniversary survey. And then, of course, an ongoing 360-degree feedback program. All these things can be part of your listening strategy. 360-degree feedback would be feedback directed at your leadership team or your managers, direct managers, and everything else would be more organizational feedback. But you can see how you can layer these things in and really create a good listening campaign to boost the level of employee voice in your organization. And when we're thinking about listening campaigns, we want you to think about critical moments in employee experience. So remember, employee experience or engagement is going to be an outcome of the employee experience. When we think about moments in the employee experience, we think about two different categories at DecisionWise. And the first kind of category, and we're going to go into two Greek words. One is chronos, and the other is going to be kairos. So chronos moments are those that happen at predetermined points in time during an employee's term of service within an organization. So those are going to be like when you're hired, during your onboarding, when you're trained, whenever you hit an anniversary, during performance reviews, during when you get promoted, when you're exited. What are the things that are happening with these employees, or what's the experience for these employees at those specific moments? The nice thing about these moments is that you can plan for them. So when we talked about creating a listening strategy, for example, if you struggle with onboarding, it's really easy for you to gain feedback from people that have just been onboarded, because it's anybody that's been there for a couple of months has just gone through your onboarding program. So you are able to get feedback on that and then adjust the design of your onboarding process in order to make it more engaging, or in order to get people more engaged and more prepared to do the work that you need them to do. So onboarding surveys are a really critical thing, but the same thing can be true at anniversaries, during your performance reviews. You can design those experiences so that the experience that they have in these pre-planned events is optimal. It leads them to be more engaged rather than less engaged. So we use lifecycle surveys in that case. We talked about lifecycle surveys on that previous slide, but that's going to be the anniversary, the exit, the onboarding survey. So we can gather feedback during those processes. We can even say, look, for a new hire, we can gather feedback from your new hires to say, how was the recruiting process? Because your relationship with an employee, that employee's experience with your organization begins in the recruiting process and is carried through all the way till the day they decide to leave that organization, hopefully via retirement if they're a good employee. So surveys can certainly help you to measure that. But when you measure that, you need to have a planned check-in point to say, all right, we're going to adapt the design of our lifecycle events as we gather this feedback. The harder part about the employee experience and managing critical moments in the employee experience are these moments that we call Kairos moments. And Kairos is translated from Greek roughly as, quote, the right moment, unquote, the right moment. So as we think about an employee's experience, there are going to be things that they remember. Most employees will remember their first day of work. That's a Kairos moment. Most employees remember what happens to them on their anniversary. Most employees will remember their last performance review. Those are all Kairos moments. But they also might remember what happened to them or what happened as part of their experience when they made a mistake or when a customer complained about something that they did or when we, heaven forbid, had to have a reduction in force. How did the organization react to that? And what was my experience during that reduction in force? Periods of heavy workload, workplace conflict, lifestyle changes, failures, personal issues, you know, family member gets sick. How is the organization responding? And what is my experience with that organization when those things happen? The hard thing about all of those is that it's in an indeterminate timeline. And you can see the difference between the timeline and the Kairos moments was, hey, we tick off these events, these life cycle events one at a time when we're dealing with Kairos moments. But with these things that are Kairos moments, we never know when they're going to happen. So you might be very confident, or your CEO or you as a leader in HR might be very confident that when something like this happens, somebody makes a mistake or they have a personal issue or they failed or they've got a lifestyle change or something that's happened, you might be very confident that you would be able to deal with that in an appropriate way. Are you also confident that every manager or leader in your organization who is wearing the label of your organization as a representative of your organization, are you also confident that they will deal with those moments in the right way? Do they have the proper expectations set for them to be able to deal with those moments in the right way? We're seeing more and more of those moments these days because there are people that need to leave or need to have time off work because they're sick, or because they have a family member that's sick, or there are immunocompromised people that'll have a different situation, a different set of circumstances that they need to work to in order for them to remain safe at work. There's a new question that organizations are using that don't usually use it. Usually a safety question on surveys was only used historically by manufacturing organizations, maybe in healthcare, transportation, those sorts of organizations where people are doing physical things where their safety could be compromised. These days, what we're seeing is more organizations including something about safety and well-being, health, all those things. And the question that we're asking, or the statement that we're presenting to people on surveys, is this organization cares about my personal well-being or safety. So new situations come up like this. Now, most of the people on this call will probably have already created procedures for how to deal with somebody that's going to be on COVID-19 leave, how to deal with somebody who has sick family members or is in quarantine. But what about the next thing that comes up, the next crisis? What have you learned from this crisis that you can carry forward? And what are the expectations that we can set with our leadership team to make sure that these critical moments in the employee experience are things that are managed the way that you would have them be managed as either a leadership team or an HR team or what have you? As you're designing the employee experience, you have to also design the expectations for what happens in these critical moments. So preparing for Kairos moments, because they are unpredictable, it can be very difficult to seek feedback from employees every time they've had these moments. So we're not giving somebody's gone through a personal issue. We're not giving them a survey afterwards to say, how did we handle your personal issue? You got sick. How did we handle your sickness? We're not sending them a survey based on that. So we're not gathering feedback in that same way. And so I'm going to go back to define leadership competencies and behaviors may take the place of some of the feedback that you could gather at other parts of the year. So when we define competencies and behaviors, we're able to then, through 360 degree feedback or through annual performance reviews, see and understand how managers are stacking up against those competencies and behaviors that are expected for them during those Kairos or critical moments. So 360 degree feedback, again, can be a powerful tool in boosting employee engagement and boosting the level of the perceptions around the employee experience in your organization. And it certainly can be something that can help shape your culture. So working backwards from that first thing that we've talked about at the very beginning, what is a culture? What is an employee experience? And what is employee engagement? Well, cultural elements are found, or these competencies that people exhibit as leaders in your organization are found among the cultural elements that will lead to your employee experience, which will ultimately lead to your employees deciding whether they're going to engage or not engage in your organization.
Hey, Dave, on the 360s, usually you mentioned it's the leadership, it's the manager, somebody that's involved in this process that's receiving the 360. What is that manager's impact in engagement? You talked about those, you know, those Kairos moments. Why, you know, maybe take just a step a little bit deeper into why those competencies, because that manager and how they influence, you know, have the influence of engagement. You talked about belonging, but we've also found that the manager is, you know, we found and have known that the manager is a key component of that engagement as well, and just how they all fit together.
And Justin, it might be another opportunity for you to send out the cost of a bad manager.
Oh, that's a good
graphic that we have. Yeah. So we've done some looking into the cost of a bad manager. I think most people are going to be familiar with at least describing qualitatively what a bad manager can do to the engagement of their team. But some of the things that we have seen quantitatively with regard to engagement, what can happen with a bad manager is when you have a good manager, in other words, a manager who's perceived well by their team with regard to those things that they're doing in the management category, how they give feedback, how they recognize people, how often they meet with their employees, you know, all those kind of defined areas. When a manager is doing those things really well, and not only doing them on a frequent enough basis, but also doing them in a skilled way, we're far more likely to have an engaged team that is reporting to that. And it's something like twice as likely to have an engaged team doing that. Now, there are other managers that kind of do it sort of so-so, but then we have managers that do those things very poorly, that are viewed very poorly by their employees. And if you have a manager that's viewed very, very poorly by their employees, you're much more likely to have a disengaged team. And I think it's something like 8 times more likely to have a disengaged team. And that's not the only problem that you're going to get from a bad manager, because a bad manager will also lead to people leaving the organization at a much higher clip. And the cost of turnover, because you had a bad manager, is a cost that you really don't want to bear. And it's a cost that you don't really want to pay, because it's avoidable by setting the right expectations, or maybe even having the right manager in there to begin with, setting the right expectations with that manager, and then coaching and developing them to those expectations. So all that avoidable turnover that you have because people don't like their managers, it is a cost that your organization should not want to bear.
Yeah, that's great. That's great feedback. And I think it's important to recognize, you know, we often think about 360s and performance reviews kind of as outside of engagement and the employee experience. And the reality is they are an integral part of what's going on with that employee experience. And like what you talked about earlier, how that then leads to employee engagement overall. They are not disparate items. They are fully integrated into what's going on.
I think, you know, if you look at it, organizations that are sort of dipping their toe into engagement, I think a really good way to dip your toe into engagement is to run an engagement survey, a very simple survey, get some simple feedback for your organization, create an action plan that's succinct, you know, 3-4 things that you're going to take action on, complete that action plan, communicate on it. Remember what we talked about with regard to maturity, That's the base level of maturity. Once you have been doing this for a little bit of time, then your goal shifts from taking action on the survey, on an engagement survey, to expanding ownership to everybody in the organization. So it's okay to dip your toe in it, and it's certainly good for you to take action on a survey. But if you're looking to drive this to the next level, then a critical part of that is expanding ownership, driving engagement through your leadership structure. If you don't get to that point, you're never going to meaningfully impact engagement over the long term. And some organizations, by the way, do a really good job of getting engagement survey feedback in the hands of their direct managers and giving them feedback on what they can do or what they should do in order to improve engagement on their teams. And so that's part of that. But there's also this other part that says, what are the general expectations that we have for leaders here, and how have we defined those, and how are people meeting those expectations? Is such an important part of building employee engagement. And it's usually something that you can do after you've dipped your toe in engagement a little bit. You can drive it to the next level by inserting things like leadership competency models, 360-degree feedback, putting it into your annual performance review, et cetera, to boost the level of accountability you have for driving engagement through your leadership structure. The only other thing that I have as a kind of summary item is think about, you know, again, if you've dipped your toes with the annual survey, think about how might you expand your listening strategy. Are you struggling with your onboarding process? Are you struggling with retaining people? Are you struggling with recognizing milestone events like promotions or anniversaries? Then you might think about how do we can add to our listening strategy something about getting feedback in those areas. Or you might think about adding 360-degree feedback to your plan as well. So expanding your listening strategy is another way to kind of move up the maturity model in terms of where you are as an organization. What happens is organizations work on those fundamentals. And when they work on the fundamentals of moving up the maturity model, just an outcropping of that is a higher engaged workforce.
That's great. Dave, thank you so much. This has been a lot of information and really, really insightful. Love how you've brought everything together with culture, the employee experience, and employee engagement. We do hear those words used simultaneously as we talk to people throughout the world, and they really are. They're three distinct areas and things that we need to do differently to focus on them and to help and improve and mature in those different areas. So again, Dave, thank you very much, and thank you to everyone involved.